is recording now, and if to pause, if you ever want to say, off the record, just hit the record button, and it'll pause, or tell me, and then we can start
it. I can see the record button.
It's really neat. Or you can even just
Oh, yeah, that's this one right here. Yeah, okay, yeah. Got it.
The neat thing about digital is great, because you can, you don't run out of tape or anything.
That's
like
nice.
That.
That's really nice.
So there are a few things that I've heard that you are a model entrepreneur about in the human services. But one, since you had you ever seen this?
I probably did. Actually, when you sent it to me, I did look at it, and it's, you know, it's like it's another life, you know. And I remember a lot of this stuff, and I'm really going to try to bring it up, because I do remember there was a lot of articles in the newspaper, and I knew what we were doing related to the changes in welfare system and everything. Did I remember that particular article? Not really, but there wasn't anything in it that I didn't know about it. So,
gotcha.
You know.
So you were this sort of describes this as one of the Onondaga County as one of the six sites that would operate a demonstration, a waiver demonstration program. And so this was you.
Well, me and some others.
You and some others.
Yes, absolutely.
And you know that you're praised by Donna Shalala and Mary Jo Bain.
I remember Mary Jo Bain. I actually remember her, yes.
Oh, really?
I do, yes.
You met her?
I met her, yes. I met her. Uh-huh. And actually, now you talked to David Sutkowy, right?
I did, yes.
Okay. Because he and I were kind of co-conspirators here. Yeah, we were co-conspirators on all this. And he was not commissioner then. And, all right, can I give you a background?
Sure,
will this help?
I'd love,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. In 1987,
1987, wow.
I came to the college. I actually had been at the college before that, but I started working on a different project here. It was called the PACE program, and that stood for Public Assistance Comprehensive Employment. That was when Mario Cuomo was governor, and there were, I think, about 14 PACE programs around the state. The idea behind that was for people on public assistance, instead of just trying to get them into the workforce, get them to a community college, get them a degree, so then they can get off public assistance immediately. And that was a special project through social services in Governor Cuomo's era. And again, OCC was one of the projects. I came to work on that project. And it was really interesting. We won't talk about that now, but that was a very interesting project. I learned a lot. I had worked in social services areas for a lot, but this was a whole new animal. And actually, I think I was assistant director to begin with, and the staff that we had, they were actually called advocates. So that tells you what the idea was. The idea was to advocate for these folks, both with the social services system and with the college, to help them get through, get an associate's degree, get a job, and hopefully go off public assistance for good. That was the idea.
So they could actually get a 2-year degree?
They could then, yes.
Wow.
That was exactly what you could get, a 2-year degree, and most people take longer than 2 years to get a 2-year degree, but as long as we were working them along and getting them there, in the very beginning there was a lot more latitude. I think that one of the reasons, we were always really successful here at OCC, and I think one of the reasons was we always worked really cooperatively with the college and with social services. Now, having said that, we were fortunate we had some great people in social services. Not always the way. Okay. We had great people. And one of the things we did, we spent a lot of time in the beginning just, you know, working with people, trying to figure out what the issues were, trying to understand stuff from their point of view, so that we didn't want to come in as kind of, you picture an advocate coming in and saying, hey, you need to do this for this person, or you need to do this, you're doing it all wrong, and blah, blah, blah. We didn't want to do that at all. We wanted to say from, for example, here at financial services, you know, I had a lot of issues with financial services. All right, from your point of view, why do you do it this way? And is there something that we can do to make it easier for you so that our students can get their financial aid on time and they don't have to miss classes and, you know, all that drill? And, you know, to use one simple example, and this was so long ago, it's not like this at all anymore, but the students often didn't get their financial aid until classes were really into classes, so they couldn't get their books. And, you know, they, by the time they got their books and everything, a lot of times they were so far behind they would never catch up. Ever. Well, what they let us do was, through our grant, we basically developed a form that guaranteed the payment for those books. So the bookstore would then take that from us, because we had a grant, and, you know, I don't know if we ever could have really paid it, but, you know, but we did have a grant, and we had a line that said all other expenses. So we would sign the form, and the person would go over there, and they would let her get her books so mm-hmm. she would get them at the beginning. Mm-hmm. So that took care of their concern that they wouldn't get paid, and it took care of our concern. Mm-hmm. You know, did we get stung once in a while? Probably. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, it was... It worked. Gotcha. So that was that on the OCC end. On the social services end, that was in some ways a tougher nut to crack because mm-hmm. you have people coming from all different backgrounds who really didn't at that time think it was a good idea. They were often people who worked in social services who weren't making very much money themselves, who mm-hmm. didn't have a college degree themselves. And sometimes their thought process was, why am I working here? Mm-hmm. To put this person through college when I can't even afford to do it for myself or my own kids. Mm-hmm. So that was a little mm-hmm. it was a little tougher nut to crack there. Mm-hmm. But again, we had great people there, and we again tried to look at it from their point of view. Mm-hmm. You know, what were their concerns and how can we alleviate their concerns? And one of their big concerns were that we were, not we personally, but that people were in college too long and they never really were going to get a job, and it was just a way to avoid working. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we came up with some strategies to deal with that. And we also, I think it was a learning experience for us because we did sort of focus on that. And quite frankly, there were some people that were doing that. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so we tried to be a little more intentional about making mm-hmm. sure that, you know, we were doing this for the right reasons and that people were following through with what they needed to follow through. So those are just two simple mm-hmm. examples. But at any rate, mm-hmm. we did pretty well with the PACE program. Well, of course, you know, politics is as it is, and mm-hmm. Things started to change. And I think this was when Donna Shalala was in, and I never remember the name of this guy, but if you talk with David, he probably said it. His name was David something.
I would.
Yes.
He mentioned
him. He told
yeah,
you that story?
Yes, yes.
That is huge on this because we went to, I'm sure David told you, but David and Annette and a few of us went to this conference, which was mainly social services people. Mm-hmm. And this guy gets up and he says, you know, you're all working really, really hard, but you're mm-hmm. doing the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we talked about it afterwards, so that was pretty gutsy to say, mm-hmm. you know, because these people were, you know, basically doing what they were told to do. They were following the regulations and everything. But that was huge for us. We drove home. And we really talked about it. We said, you know, when you sort of get past the defensiveness here, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. he was right. Mm-hmm. We have been doing the wrong thing. We were doing it because they told us to do it, mm-hmm, but let's mm-hmm. see if we can be a little more creative. So that was kind of the germ uh-huh. of what turned out to be Jobs Plus, which mm-hmm. is we're going to do things differently. Now, there was a whole bunch of stuff that happened in between, which I don't know if you're interested in or not. So,
well, you were in PACE
yep.
at that point?
Yeah.
You were still
in PACE. I had mm-hmm. moved along, mm-hmm. still with the college. Okay, uh-huh. all right. This is probably really not interesting to you. But
it really is because one of the things I'm interested in giving students a flavor for how careers go in
okay.
service.
Okay, all right then.
And yours being sort of a shining
star. Weird.
Sort of
mine is weird. okay.
You know how things change.
Yes.
And,
okay. Well, I was still with PACE. The, mm-hmm. the PACE program started to disappear as the politics moved. And what they decided at the state level was the formula for funding for PACE, which was federal, state, and local, mm-hmm. that if the locals wanted to continue that, there was a way to do it, but the mm-hmm. locals had to do it. They weren't mm-hmm. going to fund it through the state anymore. Mm-hmm. You could still draw down state dollars, mm-hmm. but they weren't going to do it anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's when some of the PACE programs just disappeared. And I think in some cases, they had built up such adversarial relationships with their social services that they were more than happy to say goodbye. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We had not done that. So we were pretty good. So we continued kind of through the county, although we drew down federal and state dollars for a number of years with PACE. But in the meantime, that's kind of when we got mm-hmm. involved with the whole David Elwood and what could we do differently. At the same time, David Sutkowicz is trying to pull together. He knows welfare reform is coming, mm-hmm. and there's no way the county can do this. There's mm-hmm. just absolutely no way the county could do what we knew were going to be some of the new regulations, you know, mm-hmm. more participation, more, you know, just a whole different emphasis. So there was no way that this could happen. So what he did initially was, because this is David, he's real big on partnerships, and he pulled everybody together, and, you know, we had some meeting after meeting, which can get really tedious, mm-hmm. but on the other hand, you got to do it. You got to involve everybody. Mm-hmm. And what he did initially was for what was then called AFDC, which mm-hmm. was the people on public assistance who had kids. He worked that through the Department of Labor, because, of course, that was another player, and they got money to work with people on public assistance too, so you got to keep them in the loop. And what he did was he set up kind of a, it wasn't really a one-stop, but we'll call it a one-stop for now, for everybody who was on AFDC, who was now required with the new regulations coming in to do things differently, to have some kind of work activities. They would go through this office at DOL. And again, this is David being David. He appointed the guy who was the manager of that whole section in charge of it all. So he basically gave control to Mike Sherlock, the nice guy. And then what he did was put some of his staff over there. So you had one office that had Department of Labor and Department of Social Services employees all trying to do this, you know, get started on the whole welfare reform, which was just looking at things very, very differently and encouraging work. Mm-hmm. And I think they called it Jobs First then. And this is sort of around when she was here. Mm-hmm. Actually, it was. It was right around that time.
Oh, she came here.
No, I'm sorry. I meant time-wise that she was. Yes, mm-hmm. I think it was around 93, mm-hmm. somewhere around then. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm still working up here with the PACE program through the county, and we are participating in that. We're saying, okay, there's a certain number of people. We'll make sure that they're going to get through at a certain time, and we'll really focus on employment, and you know, and we took care of their child care and all of that. Well, I don't know how much you've worked with bureaucracies, but they all have their own thing. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of reasons, it wasn't working really well at Department of Labor. And I think probably a lot of it was, I'm not sure there was a lot of buy-in mm-hmm. to where we were trying to go with this. Mm-hmm. Mike retired. Mm-hmm. And his assumption at that time was that one of the other DOL people that was there was going to take over for him. And this is when David came up here to visit me, and he said, would you do it? Mm-hmm. And, you know, my first reaction was, are you out of your mind? Are you crazy? Well, I thought about it, and I said, when we talked, I said, I will do it if I can stay an OCC employee. Because mm-hmm. I didn't want to be a county employee, didn't want to mm-hmm. be a state employee. I couldn't have been a state employee, that he didn't have that to offer me. Mm-hmm. But I didn't want to do that. Mm-hmm. And I thought it would be good for the college, because the college needed to continue to be involved in all of this. Mm-hmm. We didn't want to be the outsiders looking in here. So then I had to deal with it on my end at the college. You know, what do you think about this? Blah, blah, blah. Because, you know, and then, you know, David said, yeah, we can do that. So we worked out all the stuff. And I was actually down at Department of Labor then. Mm-hmm. Now I'm down there. I'm an OCC employee. Mm-hmm. I'm supervising DOL employees and DSS employees. Mm-hmm. And I think I still had PACE under me at that time, although they were up here. That was really interesting. Let me tell you. I mean, you know, you have the whole, you know, the whole organizational culture, and they were so different. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, you cannot imagine how different these organizational cultures were. And trying to bring them together to at least buy into the basics. Well, we did that, and it was actually we were doing pretty well. I mean, we didn't even have. I couldn't believe it when I went down to DOL. There was not even a database. Mm-hmm. I can remember getting up in the middle of the night, creating spreadsheets, because that's as much as I knew at the time, mm-hmm. so that I could keep track of these people. Mm-hmm. Because there was no way to do it. And here's my favorite story about being there. Mm-hmm. Okay, one Christmas, I was going to be gone for like 3 or 4 days, mm-hmm. around Christmas time. And one of the things I noticed about one of these organizations is that the people that worked there were, you know, they really wanted to do a good job and everything, but for whatever reason, they were really insecure on all of their decisions. Very insecure. So they would come to me with every little teeny thing, and I wasn't used to that mm-hmm. at all. I was used to hiring people that knew their job mm-hmm. and that they understood they needed to come to me when there was something I needed to deal with, but basically, mm-hmm. I trust you, and mm-hmm. if you make a mistake, we'll learn from it. That's okay. Mm-hmm. Well, this was not the way down there. I came back. I will never forget this, ever. I came back after about 4 days gone, and I had a desk probably about like that. I came into my office, and this is not a lie, I'm not exaggerating. It was piled high with files, with notes, little sticky notes on them. There was a chair over there, piled high with files, with sticky notes on them.
Oh my goodness.
Blah, blah, blah. What should we do? What should mm-hmm. we do? These are people that had more experience than I did, mm-hmm. you know? And I just was in total, absolute shock. I looked at a couple of them, they were all very obvious, and I just brought the people in. I said, you need to take these back uh-huh. and make a decision uh-huh. on all uh-huh. of these, because uh-huh. I can't. If I make a decision on all these, I don't need all you people, mm-hmm. you know, which uh-huh. was true, uh-huh. you know. Uh-huh. So they did, uh-huh. and we actually made some progress on that. So somewhere in there is when we go to, oh, go ahead.
No, I want to ask, what was it about the mentality? Was it something about the way they had been working in there?
I think so. I think it was the organizational culture of that uh-huh. organization, mm-hmm. whereas everything was very, how do I want to say, not flexible. Mm-hmm. It was very, you just didn't do anything without going through exact proper channels and doing everything exactly by the regulations mm-hmm. and exactly, and that's not me. Mm-hmm. Not, and I don't mean I flout the rules, I don't mm-hmm. mean that, mm-hmm. but it was just, I think that was the organizational culture. Mm-hmm. And I think they were very afraid to do what, these are very different things I'm mm-hmm. telling them to do. Mm-hmm. You know, this mm-hmm. isn't what they're used to doing in many ways. And I'm saying, go ahead, use your best judgment. This is what we're here about. This is what we want to accomplish. You know these people. You've mm-hmm. met them. You know what, you know, they've all worked with people for a long, long mm-hmm. time. So, you know, make a decision on it and go forward. And if there's something we need to change afterwards, we'll change it afterwards. You know, I'm not going to mm-hmm. worry about it.
What types of things were these? What kinds of decisions?
Okay, let me see mm-hmm. if I can come up with one. Well, this the big change we were going toward mm-hmm. was being more intentional about requiring people to participate. Mm-hmm. Now it's gotten way tougher now, but then it was a huge change. It was a huge mm-hmm. change. To sort of give you an example, before that, if somebody came in and technically they were required to participate in a work activity, it would not be unusual for somebody to come in and say, they have an appointment, they'd call up maybe and reschedule it. Oh, you know, my kids are sick or I'm sick. Okay, fine. They'd reschedule them for another month. Mm-hmm. Then they'd call up again and reschedule them for another month. Mm-hmm. And it would, you know, it would be sometimes 6 months before you even got them in there. Mm-hmm. Now, whether that was true or not, that really wasn't the point. We couldn't do that anymore mm-hmm. because we were required to make these new participation rates, and the county would get penalized if we didn't make participation rates. That's the simple side. The other side is you're not really helping anybody mm-hmm. by continuing this whole way to do this. You mm-hmm. know, if we really are saying that a person will be better off ultimately if they get in the workforce, then we need to encourage that. That's what we need mm-hmm. to do. Mm-hmm. But that was such a huge change for them. Mm-hmm. So, for example, here's an example. Somebody would have had an appointment to come in and maybe called and canceled it. Then I would have a little sticky note. Should I make this appointment for 2 weeks or 4 weeks? Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. You know, or, yeah. you know, she says she uh-huh. can't do this kind of work, but her history says she can. What should I do? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know.
So discretionary, you have to use discretion.
And
that wasn't really part of the former AFDC.
Not really.
Program.
I mean, uh-huh. technically it was. Technically mm-hmm. people were required then mm-hmm. to participate when their youngest child was 6 years old. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was way back in the old days. Mm-hmm. But participation activities were very broad, mm-hmm. and there were really hardly any penalties for not participating, mm-hmm. or there were penalties that nobody really followed through with. Mm-hmm. And there certainly were not penalties for the counties. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. there really wasn't a lot of, you know, it wasn't a high priority. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what, you know, when we went to that workshop, the idea social services workers had before, because this is what they were told, is what you should do is help people, make sure they get their benefits and get out of their way. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And this was a completely other way of looking mm-hmm. at it. Completely other. And so it was kind of hard to, you know, mm-hmm. to put people who had never been in the role of having to actually enforce anything, than to have them do that. Mm-hmm. It was a huge culture change, mm-hmm. huge, mm-hmm. huge, huge. And what we, because there wasn't additional money at the time, we worked with the people we had. Mm-hmm. We had at that time, me, mm-hmm. and Department of Labor and Department of Social Services. So mm-hmm. it wasn't like, at that point anyway, mm-hmm. you could bring in a whole bunch of people who had maybe a little different mindset mm-hmm. or, you know, could do. We had a little more ability to do things differently. Mm-hmm. So you did the best you could. And you know, we didn't do bad. Didn't
what
do badly.
What size was the staff about?
Okay. Now, again, this was only for the AFDC, not what was then called the Home Relief. I think I probably had initially maybe 8 DOL and 8 social services, so yeah, mm-hmm. maybe 20, I don't mm-hmm. know, and then, mm-hmm. you know, it's hard to remember, really.
Yeah. just a ballpark.
Yeah, mm-hmm. probably about, I'd say maybe mm-hmm. 20 at the time. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, I still had the PACE staff up here, and they were great. Mm-hmm. So when we had this one issue that just would not go away, and this was more of a social services issue, and that was child care, how you paid mm-hmm. for child care and what mm-hmm. you did for child care. And it sounds like it's so simple, but it wasn't. It was mm-hmm. because at that time, child care at social services wasn't just in one area. Mm-hmm. It was like all over here, too. Mm-hmm. It was just a nightmare, an absolute nightmare. So I had tried several ways to get this resolved, uh-huh. and it wasn't resolving. So what I did was, I forgot. Oh, no, is that the, my goodness.
Oh, I heard power was out.
Yeah,
in a few places.
There goes your... Oh, no, that's battery out. Let's
battery, yeah.
Let's see if we're going to get any more here. Only one? I don't know.
When we left off. Oh. mostly, Pace, there was a child care issue.
Okay. Yes, so what I did was I borrowed one of the staff that was here. And, you know, we all worked really cooperatively. I said, Diane, can I just have Diane for, like, maybe 10 hours a week to help me with the child care issue? Because I need, and I knew her judgment was good and she's smart and everything. So I sort of took her and then had her work with the social services folks and go to those meetings where, you know, you go crazy.
What kind of meeting? These were not working with individual clients.
No, no, no. This was a systemic issue. We were trying to work out the system for getting people paid for child care, which now does not sound like it should have been all what it was, but you had like years and years of history of problems with this. It was a typical situation of people would do things in a certain way and nobody even remembered why you did them that way. But that's how you do them. You know, so if it has to go to the fourth floor to get a signature in social services, nobody even remembered why it had to go there. But that's just the way we always did it.
Gotcha.
So Diane was really good at, and there were several different departments in social services that dealt with child care. So, and you got all your own, you not only have organizational cultures, you got departmental cultures, you got different personalities, you got, you know, you're not even sure who really does understand the regulations. So, you know, but Diane was great. She was able to cut through that, and we were able to actually set up the beginnings of a system where child care could actually be paid in a timely fashion and where everybody was comfortable. So that was just kind of a sneaky way to get that happen, to get that to happen, because there was really nobody I had with the DOL or the DSS folks at that time who could have done that. Needed so an outside way.
An outsider to sort of come in and question things.
But she knew enough. Diane had worked in social services in another county, so she knew enough about the system that she didn't come in as a total innocent, but she was not involved with any of those folks, you know, per se. So she could ask intelligent questions, and we went forward. So we were able to get that done. Now, right around this time is when we went for that conference. We know welfare reform is coming, blah, blah, blah. Mike Sherlock is retiring.
So you've already...
I'm over there, yes.
You already started something with DOL before the conference.
Yes, we did.
So you already...
We're already going in a certain direction. We just didn't know how we were going to do it at that point.
What made you go in that direction?
The direction of...
Well, you've started making, you put the DOL and the DSS together with OCC administrator.
Yep, David did that.
And, you know, how did you, you're already going.
But, we knew. Okay, we go to this conference. We know welfare reform's coming.
How did you know it was coming?
Well, you just keep your ear to the ground. You know what's coming. You got a new governor. You got a new president because Clinton was in then and who made a big deal about how welfare reform was going to happen. You know something's going to happen, and you know it's going to emphasize work. You just don't know how it's going to sort of settle in. But, you know, but in addition to that, you really start seeing it in a different way. You know, you really start seeing yourself more as someone who should be encouraging work as opposed to just making sure people get their benefits and get out of the way. And that probably doesn't sound like a big thing, but it was a big thing.
So you, what made you start to see yourself in this?
Okay, I can. Well, I talk for myself personally. I had worked with Pace for a number of years. Completely believed in the concept. Yes, we should definitely make sure people can get a job so that they can get off public assistance and never go back. And we'll do whatever we have to do. And quite frankly, we were pretty successful. On the other hand, it opened my eyes to a lot of things. And that is, a heck of a lot of people that we put in this program, we set up for failure. They were no way ready to do this. No way would this have ever been successful for them. Sounded good, but they had so much else going on in their lives. And I'm not talking about they weren't intelligent enough to do this. They had, although they did have really bad, you know, educational background. That was, you know, a lot of dropouts and all that kind of stuff for very good reasons. But their lives were so complicated that even if we had done everything, and we did, we would have the same kind of situations where somebody would be in her, let's say she had one semester left, and we, like, you know, maybe it took her 2.5 years to get that far, and she would get pregnant. And that's just one example, you know, or something else would happen. Her mother would get sick, or, you know, just there was just a myriad of things that would happen. And when you really looked at it, you'd think, we didn't really deal with that stuff. We didn't deal with that. We dealt with making an assumption that the person is ready to come here, get an education. Might take her a little longer. We'll give her tutoring, blah, blah, blah. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then ready to get a job. That was not her world at that point. Mm-hmm. There was so much else going on in her world that doing all of that was not going to get her where she needed to go.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things we started thinking about was the whole idea of work, mm-hmm. and it, which had sort of been the bad thing before. It's like, oh, you don't want to make anybody work at a minimum wage job. And I totally changed my mind mm-hmm. about that. Mm-hmm. You know, when you really think about it, I thought I worked at minimum wage jobs. That's how I learned all the basic work skills that everybody is still complaining that people don't have, mm-hmm. not just people on welfare, you know, kids mm-hmm. out of school, you know, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, all the basic mm-hmm. stuff of, you know, being a professional at work, getting to work on time, knowing how to interact with your supervisor, being consistent, going to work, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. those kinds of things. You know, that's how you learn that. And a lot of these folks had never had never experienced that. Mm-hmm. So I kind of changed my mind about the value of work, even if it was minimum wage, or even if it was what was then called unpaid work experience.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of, that's what changed my mind watching what I had mm-hmm. up here. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, all of us sort of came to that from different points of view. We had all worked at some place in the system, and, mm-hmm. you know, you don't want to just look at things as a, you know, these poor people. You don't want to do that. You really don't want to do that. It's not respectful. And so we just started looking at it differently, and it just sort of all came together. Mm-hmm. And then what happened was we just sat there, we're driving home, and we go, you know, there's no way we're going to accomplish this with what we have.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I honestly don't know whose idea it was. I really don't, because it was such synergy going. And David said, or I said, or Annette said, I don't remember, what about if we work it through the college? What about if we use the same funding formula, which was perfectly legal to do this, but set up something completely different in a different place, hire new people, because through the county, we couldn't have done it through the county, because you have all other kinds of regulations through the county in terms of civil service and everything. What about if we set these all up as OCC employees, but we also integrate any of the social services employees that want to and can be part of this new thing? So, you know, again, it'll be a very integrated kind of an operation, and you know, we'll do training, we'll set things up completely different, we'll have new systems and everything. So that's kind of where the germ of the idea came.
So it was born in the car.
It was born in the car.
Or conceived in the car.
Conceived in the car.
Which is funny when you think about the welfare Cadillacs or that, it wasn't a Cadillac, was it?
Oh God, no! Are you kidding? I drive a Subaru with the check engine light still on.
The welfare Subaru. Was it a welfare Subaru?
It probably was a Subaru because David always drove a Subaru too, so that's probably what it was. Yes.
So, well, that's kind of funny. That, And so it's conceived there, and you sort of it's sort of interesting thought process. You're sort of describing the learning from experience with, you know what you're seeing day to day. But also there's a national discourse.
Yes, absolutely. And a state discourse. Yes.
And those national state discourses were kind of along the lines of what you're talking about.
Yes.
Work is not...
Yes. They called it, when Pataki first came in, I think... Or no, when Cuomo was leaving, he was starting to lean that way and was actually called Jobs First. And we started calling our program Jobs First. And then when Pataki got elected, we thought, we got to be smart here. If we call ourselves Jobs First, that has the smack of the old governor, and he might not like us. So we actually came up to the college, met with the marketing people, and said, all right, we want to come up with a different name. And that's how we ended up being Jobs Plus.
So you met with the marketing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We're no dummies.
And it was part of being innovative, but not...
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we knew what we wanted to do. The concept was there. We knew what we wanted to do, and we knew why we wanted to do it. At this point, the challenge is for David to sell it to the county and for me to sell it to the college.
And you felt sort of that this would be fertile ground.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And was that in part because the discourse that you're talking about, you know, I seem to remember reading something about how national discourse was very structural, and David actually described it as structural, and then there started to be literature about
there was all kinds of things,
you know, exactly. You're training people and they're never getting jobs and they're
exactly
and
it, yes
and so that
we need to do something different. I mean, that was I think pretty much everybody felt that way. there were, I mean, that actually probably is not true. There were people on the other side of the political aisle who felt that welfare reform was terrible, mm-hmm. that we were just hurting people who already, you know, had tough lives, mm-hmm. and, you know, making people work, an unpaid work experience was a terrible thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, there really were, and, mm-hmm. and there were a lot of articles about, all right, what you're going to have is an increase in the prison population, you're going to have an increase in food bank problems, all that kind of stuff, none of which ever happened, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. ever happened. Mm-hmm. But the idea was that this was just such a terrible punitive system. Mm-hmm. And in some places, it might have turned out to be that way. Mm-hmm. We were adamant that it would not be that mm-hmm, way. Mm-hmm. And I probably, of all the things that we did related to this whole project, that is the thing I'm probably the most proud of, mm-hmm. that we weren't perfect, I won't say that at all, mm-hmm. but the vision behind it always was that we are going to make things better for help people on public assistance make their lives better. Mm-hmm. And you don't do that just by punishing when they don't do what they need to do, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. You do it also with offering rewards and helping people understand why it's ultimately their lives will be better. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, whether, you know, everybody always bought into that, I don't know. But that was our vision. So mm-hmm. we felt like mm-hmm. we had the right... Mm-hmm. the right way to look at it. We weren't looking at it just like, okay, we're going to have a great participation rate and we're going to reduce costs. Mm-hmm. Now, that did happen. Mm-hmm. That did happen. But that wasn't our goal. Mm-hmm. It might have been the county's goal. Mm-hmm. It might have been the state's goal. Mm-hmm. That wasn't our goal. Mm-hmm. Our goal was we saw, I think, all the things that we did where we really tried to be helpful, and in some cases it worked, but we just really didn't believe this was ultimately, because the caseloads kept getting higher and higher. And why are they getting higher before? Why are they getting higher and higher if we're being successful in helping mm-hmm. people? That's not right. That's mm-hmm. something's wrong. We're doing mm-hmm. something wrong. Mm-hmm. So so that's kind of the way we went at it. And then, you know, David convinced the county side. I was able to convince the college side. And then it was just a matter of we found a new place. We went through the whole... It was really interesting because we had totally new job titles mm-hmm. that had never existed mm-hmm. before. So I had to work with the HR guy here, and you know, some of them had to go through the SUNY mm-hmm. approval system, mm-hmm. and which was kind of odd because they're mm-hmm. not typical SUNY titles.
Right.
And then we were just sort of feeling our way mm-hmm. is what mm-hmm. we were doing, mm-hmm. and we had very close communication with the county, OCC people and the county people, David and me and everybody else on a regular basis, because mm-hmm. what we knew is we're going to make a lot of mistakes. We just need mm-hmm. to keep going and make sure we're all still on the same page. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. and that's really kind of what we did. And that was actually, we opened our doors in 1995 mm-hmm. downtown at the mm-hmm. Jobs Plus. And a lot of changes since then. At the beginning, there was, once welfare reform passed at the federal level, and then New York State was one of the last states to ratify it, although they had started with welfare reform in a different way before that. So, you know, you had a lot of reform there. Mm-hmm. There was so much money. And we, you know, you looked at that, and I remember saying to David, you know, this is so not going to be forever. You know, we need to take advantage of this. And he said the same thing. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, that stuff ebbs and flows is mm-hmm. what happens. There's going to be a time where there's no money for anything. Mm-hmm. But right now... Mm-hmm. there's a lot of interest in, you know, trying new things and doing mm-hmm. different things. Mm-hmm. And we did anytime anything came up, and I'll give you a simple example of this. Mm-hmm. 1 year, I mean, they were literally like throwing the money at the county saying, here, we have this much money, do something with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and people don't think it, but it's hard to spend money. Mm-hmm. It's really hard. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. not a simple thing. It takes work. It really mm-hmm. takes work. Well, they came at the county one time, it was a couple years into it, and they had this money, and it was supposed to be for kids to help keep them in school. I think that's what it was. I don't remember what it was. And David had run it by the folks at the county, and, you know, nobody felt like they had the time to take on one more thing, so they weren't going to do it. So he says to us, do you want to do it? Well, I talked with some of the folks at Jobs Plus. Yeah, we'll do something. Okay, well, this is one of my favorite programs we started. We started what we called at the time the Teen ACE program. And what did ACE stand for? Achievement? I don't remember what it stood for. And at the time, it was just for teens. We eventually had younger kids. But the idea was to reward the kids mm-hmm. who were in the system, who were doing what they needed to do. And one of the things I think we did that was different than other counties that used this money is we rewarded the kids, not just the kids who got A's and everything.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of my little bugaboos.
Mm-hmm.
I hate the kids that get lost.
Mm-hmm.
The kids who... work really, really hard, and the best they're ever going to do is a C. Mm-hmm. Why shouldn't they get rewarded? Mm-hmm. So we set up this whole project where it was a little different every year. They had to write an essay, and we'd give them a topic. But then what we ended up doing was giving them a choice of rewards if they won. Mm-hmm. And there was a whole bunch of them that won. It wasn't just one. Mm-hmm. And it could be anything from basketball tickets to the SU game, mm-hmm. going to the football camp, mm-hmm. Going to an art camp, mm-hmm. Books. I mean, there was just a whole variety of things. Mm-hmm. So they could check mm-hmm. what's their, you know, what do they want to do. Mm-hmm. And every year we would have a ceremony and we'd have the county executive come over. We've had the president of the college come a couple times to give out these. We had the press come. Mm-hmm. And it was so great because their parents would come and they would be all dressed up and we'd have a little reception, mm-hmm. snacks or whatever we had there. And for some of these kids, it was probably the only time anybody ever told them, mm-hmm. you get an award, uh-huh, uh-huh. you know. And it's still one of my favorite things. Mm-hmm. And we eventually did it so we had younger kids too, and we changed it every year. And we'd always have one or two kids read their essay. Uh-huh, uh-huh. And they were different topics all the time, just... You know, we didn't want the idea, and they'd have to submit the report card mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. that we could see. And the idea was they had to be passing in every subject. Uh-huh. They didn't have to get an A in every subject, but they mm-hmm. had to be, and they had to have good attendance. That, mm-hmm. Those are the two things: good school attendance, passing in every subject, or they couldn't even apply.
So, any student that met that could apply.
They had to be on social services. Mm-hmm. They had to be in the system.
Okay.
So, but if that's a lot of kids. Let me tell you, that's mm-hmm. a lot of kids. So, if they were in the system somewhere, mm-hmm. they were passing in every subject, and we had mm-hmm. a report card that showed mm-hmm. it, and they had good school attendance, which mm-hmm. I can't remember how we defined it, but mm-hmm. we defined that somehow, and then they did their little essay or whatever mm-hmm. it was. Mm-hmm. They all got it.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah, it was one of the funnest things that we ever did. Yeah. I love that project. So.
So I mean, and you were saying this was, you did this sort of different than other counties.
Yeah.
And you were also saying earlier that you, you know, tried to be, some places might have been punitive.
Yeah.
Other counties or states. And,
yeah.
Did you have much interaction? Did you know what other counties and states were doing?
Well, we did a lot of presentations at the national level. We were involved with several organizations and did some presentations. Mm-hmm. So we had some ideas. But mostly people came to us because we were at that time, and I think still, we're probably the only project that actually the community college ran. Mm-hmm. It was very unusual because we mm-hmm. were the county's arm for, quote-unquote, mm-hmm. welfare reform. Mm-hmm. Nobody else did that. Mm-hmm. Community colleges were involved a lot of times, but as a training arm or something like that. We ran the whole shebang, so that was very, very different. So, yeah, it was more people coming to, we had a lot of people visit us, and mm-hmm. we did a lot of presentations. I wrote an article for, what the heck is that journal that's Higher Education Journal? Can't remember. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we were aware of what other people were doing, but it was more because they came to us, and then when they came to us, we would ask them, well, how do you do this, or how do you do this? And if we, you know, heard a good idea, we'd steal it, why not?
So where did you give these presentations? Are there presentations?
Or? Well, yeah, there was. I remember doing several through an organization which is defunct now. It was called Network, and it was really mainly for workforce development, mm-hmm. and it was a national organization. Eventually, I got on the national board, but then I didn't do that anymore. Mm-hmm. But they had twice a year had national conferences, mm-hmm. and had a couple times asked us to present on some, you know. First of all, how we do this, mm-hmm. but then a lot of the specifics of what we did, too. So mm-hmm. they asked us, and then that kind of got us out there. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of, we would get calls, and you know, a lot of people were just interested in what we were doing.
So how did they know to ask you, or you remember?
I remember the presentations. I remember going to the network conferences, and they were very well attended. There was like 400 or 500 people. So you had people from all across the country there. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I think that's how we sort of got out initially. Mm-hmm. Locally, there was a lot of publicity on what we were doing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have lots and lots of news clippings and you know, TV interviews mm-hmm. and everything. It was a pretty interesting topic at mm-hmm. the time. We also, when we opened the center down there, we had not right away, but after a while, had a grand opening, and we had mm-hmm. the governor there and everybody, and you know, that's always, mm-hmm. you know, that's mm-hmm. that makes people pay attention to you.
Right.
So we had that, and we had what the heck was his name? He was the Clinton's Secretary of Transportation, and his name was like Rodney something. I can't remember, but he was coming to Syracuse, and he asked again. Mm-hmm. I don't know how he heard about us, mm-hmm. but he heard about us. He asked to come and see us, so mm-hmm. he came. Mm-hmm. Got a lot of good PR on that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think once you're sort of out there, it just happens.
So, how you discovered this is? I mean, it's sort of interesting. Do you have any inkling about how you were discovered. I mean, all of a sudden you're sort of picked up on this, presenting nationally. You've got the Clinton Transportation Secretary coming.
Yeah.
I don't know. Did this come before that or after?
It was after. I mean, this was first.
This first.
And then we, you know, because this was in 94. We opened our doors in March of 95.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, then it started to really build. You know, we had a lot of local publicity when we opened. And that was intentional. Mm-hmm. We really did that because we wanted to raise our awareness. So we did it through both ends, through the college and through the county. So we had both pieces of it. And you know, they've got their own little systems each way. So, and when we would do PR related to the college, we would emphasize the college connection and the educational connection. And then when we did it through the county, we emphasized more the whole welfare reform and helping people move off welfare. And we had great numbers. We had great numbers. We really did. David might have told you this, but I think it was a couple years ago. He's known everywhere. He's so good. But Monroe, did he tell you about the Monroe County, must have been their county executive, did the State of the County speech? Did he tell you about this?
No.
He wouldn't tell you about this, but I'll tell you about it. I think it might have been 3 years ago. I don't know. And he didn't even know she was going to do it. She gave her State of the County speech. And basically, when she got to the section of talking about social services, she talked about, not to mention his name, but she talked about Onondaga County and basically said, I'm paraphrasing, why can't we be more like Onondaga County?
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
And, of course, then David started getting all these phone calls from everybody. But, our numbers were great. We had a lot of innovative stuff going on. And we really, I had a great person down at Jobs Plus. She was one of my team leaders, but she also had a background in marketing and communications and everything. And she would always make me aware. You know, I would be one to just do it. She would say, no, you need to get some information out about this. So she would say, okay, you need to do this, you need to do that. That's why we had receptions for everything. I will tell you, I can't even tell you, I will never look at punch and cookies again. Let me tell you, we had receptions for everything because it brought awareness. And she was very good about attuning me to that. And then she was always, the press contact, which was great because I don't really had to deal with that. But she was great at that. So, so I guess that's how. I mean, it just sort of... And it was also the topic of the time. I mean, people were talking about welfare reform. We would get the press come to us and say, I need a story about such and such. What do you have? You know, so it really worked both ways.
So it was a mix of this creativeness and willingness and interest.
And we really did feel like we had some really interesting things that we were doing. Like, Teen Ace was an interesting thing. We had a lot of, within what we were doing, a lot of smaller projects that we would do. And again, this sort of came out with the synergy of working with your team is that, you would be talking about, well, this is working, this is working. We're having a hard time with this. What would help with this? And then, we just get talking. And sometimes you could do it and sometimes you couldn't. Sometimes there was no money to do it. Sometimes it was just a dumb idea. And, but a lot of that, a lot of really interesting things came. We did some really fun things. Right now Teen Ace is the one that's in my mind. But there were a lot of them. There were really a lot of them that were just, that we all felt really good about. They were just really good things to do. So...
Was there an international component at all? You said you published some stuff. Did you have a feel as to how other countries were looking at the U.S. welfare reform?
That's a good question. I sort of remember thinking about that once or having some discussions, not really a lot. The only one I remember really specifically is after Dr. Sydow came here, she was very involved with Namibia, the University of Namibia. And we had already had at the college some of our folks go there as kind of an exchange thing. And one of the times when a group came, they were very interested in the whole workforce development. They didn't really call it welfare firms. I don't know what they have in that country, but it was more of a workforce type thing. And we did meet with those folks several times. And then they were putting together some kind of a project. And actually there was talk at that time. In fact, I know when this was. It was 2000. Of us going over there, which was really, I thought was really cool at the time. But then it sort of happened right around 2001. And it's like, don't think I'll go there at that point. But they actually, I know when they put together whatever they were doing, we were a big part of it in terms of what we did and how we did it. And, and I'm sure they did replicate some of what we did. You know, I mean, that was obviously very, very different culture. So you know, probably not a lot mm-hmm, in terms mm-hmm. of, like, you know, European or Canada or probably really didn't do a lot of that.
Okay. Well, the reason I ask is that there's this concept I just came across called fast policy transfer, which is some guy in, I forget where he is, Wisconsin, I think.
Yeah.
Came up, but he's originally from Europe. And talking about how it was basically what you described, where you would be doing something and presenting it and or publishing on it, and other places could pick it up to the point where you said, you know, the other county said, why can't we be more like them? And he was talking about it happening on an international level, and he was talking about the Blair government saying, you know, just the same thing as this county said.
Yeah, yeah.
Can't we be more like the U.S.? You know, this is the future. Get used to it.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah, it was very fascinating. So I was like, wow, you described the same thing, and I, you know, that he was talking about. Was there a sense of international global economy or, you know, or adjusting to the changing economy, outsourcing, downsizing?
Not a lot. To be real honest, not a lot. No, I mean, I do remember some discussions on it, but it just wasn't anything that was in the forefront of what we were doing at
all. Not a real local concern.
Yeah, local, state, national, certainly nothing other than that. I do remember meeting locally, you know, just to even get the economic developers to understand that this was an important issue, right before New York finally ratified welfare reform. And at that point, it was, you know, aside from the whole client issue, which, you know, we talked about a little bit, but in terms of economic development and the county budget and everything, if we didn't, you know, if the county was penalized, which was very likely could have happened to a lot of counties because that's when they came in with the, you only had so many lifetime years on federal public assistance, but New York State was one of the few states that said, we don't cut people off. So then you go, and federal is, you get 50% federal, 25% state, 25% local. But New York said, okay, if you go out, you lose your federal, then you go to the state plan, which is 50-50. So that's going to raise everybody's taxes. So if you talk about that with the economic developers, they paid a lot more attention. But I remember meeting with the people that were then at the Chamber of Commerce and some of the economic developers just to get them aware of this. Because, quite frankly, they didn't, and I understand why, but they didn't think welfare reform was a big issue with them. It certainly wasn't a big economic development issue. And I'll never forget the look on their face when I said, yeah, you're going to go from, you know, 50-25-25 to 50-50. And I remember one of them looked up and went, we need to make sure people know about this. And what we were trying to do there is to get some employers, and we've done pretty well with employers, but to get more employers interested in seeing that this was to their benefit to, you know, give people a chance to work too. So, that, I mean, that was our intentions, but I think it hit them in a different way. So, now again, locally we've always done pretty well on that, so it never did have a big tax hit. But it could have, and it probably did in other places. So
it's interesting because employers seem to really benefit by motivating a labor force to come in, but they weren't on board from the beginning, at least local ones.
Some were really, really good. I think the hard thing is, and this is still the balance, is you want to get an employer who will be willing to take a chance on somebody, but you really got to send them some great people to begin with or they'll never come back to you. And that's so hard. And I don't mean in terms of skills. I'm talking about the soft skills. And those are always the most difficult things. You know, you don't want to send somebody who is not going to show up for work because that's just going to reinforce all their stereotypes. So that was always a very delicate, you know, balance to kind of keep. One of the things we did related to employers was, you know, we have a pretty sizable international, you know, non-English speaking refugees here. And we had always, of course, worked with them and worked with the refugee assistance program and everything. But what we found is that sometimes there were just cultural things that we wouldn't even know that would be getting in the way. So we had one job, well, we had, I still think we probably had the most international staff ever, because we had people that spoke Russian, Ukrainian, Vietnamese, Spanish. I mean, we really had, you know, and we intentionally did that to have staff that would, you know, as much as we could speak to who we were working with. And we assigned this one gentleman. He was Russian, and he was in charge of working with the employers. And, you know, he called it something special, but I can't remember what it was. And I love the story because this was so typical. He had an employee that he had worked with and got set up with. It might have even been Stickley's. It might not have been, though, so I can't remember. But it got him a job. And the employer is thrilled. The employee is just great. He's mm-hmm. doing a great job. A couple weeks into the job, the employer notices that the employee is, you know, getting a little sullen, not very cooperative, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. So what we had set up is that the employer could always contact Pavel. He was our person. Mm-hmm. Okay. So if there's a problem and you know, mm-hmm. we've got somebody here. Okay, mm-hmm. and even if it was a different language, he'd figure out how to deal with that. Well, Pavel, I think this was a Russian guy, I can't remember. But Pavel went in and talked to the employee, and what he found out was, no, it wasn't. He wasn't Russian. I think he was Vietnamese. What he found out was that when this gentleman had interviewed for the job, he was told he would get a certain salary. When he got his first paycheck, it was less than that. But in his culture, you don't go and question the boss about that. So Pavel follows up, and what they found out, it was just a clerical error. That was all. It was simply a clerical error. Mm-hmm. They fixed it. The guy went back to work. But I think that was a really good example of how this guy could have lost his job. Mm-hmm. The employer could have thought, I'm never hiring, you know, refugees again because they're, you know, they start out great and then they get difficult, blah, 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 when it was just, you know, just a way to, you had to have somebody sort of interpret one culture to another.
So, very interesting.
Again, and that was something that probably came up at one of our team meetings. Mm-hmm. All right, what are we going to do? How are we going to deal with that? Okay, well, let's see if Pavel could be the person, the contact person. Mm-hmm. It's not that way. We've changed it all. You know, you just change all the time.
Keep changing all the time. Well, you mentioned earlier you just had great numbers.
We had great numbers,
How did you get great numbers? What was the secret behind the great
numbers?
There was
no secret. There was no secret. There was no secret. We had, I mean, it's all, there's nothing secret about this at all. We had great leadership, and I don't necessarily mean just myself. I count David Setkui and you know, all the other folks that we worked with. We shared the vision. We had the same thing that we wanted to do. At the level of David and me and Annette and a few other people, we had such trust in each other as people. And that sounds really kind of Pollyannish, but it was really true. It was absolutely true. So even though we didn't always agree with each other, we really had trust in each other, and we had trust that we were all going the same direction. And that was huge. So that when, if David would have somebody over at Social Services who would be complaining about, oh, those jobs post people, this, you know, it's really easy to jump on that bandwagon. But he would call me and say, what's going on? I would follow it back, find out what the problem was, and, you know, maybe my employee was messing up, you know. But we trusted in each other to really make sure that this would happen the right way. I was able to hire staff without... Turn that off.
Oh, yeah. You did mention a mechanism that he didn't know, but you're explaining it's the FTE, the full-time equivalency.
Yes.
We have the same thing, but it's not from the state. They want a certain number of hours...
Yes.
Per student hours or something, but so,
and then you get so much per FTE, and that goes up hopefully every year. The college gets a certain amount of money. I mean, every community college does. There's an FTE rate, and so we produce the FTEs through what we did, and then you know, we're just absolutely meticulous about counting it the correct way, making sure there were never any problems with it. And then the college got to you know, claim that, rightfully so. It was approved. There was no problem. But that was, you know, one of those things that, okay, so our college, I wouldn't say it's the only reason they like what we're doing, but in the beginning, it was a nice selling point.
But it was an innovative way to get buy-in with them.
Yeah, exactly.
Let me just pause it for a second.
Mine was college. And I'm a college employee, so, you know, I am looking out for the college. That's my employer, and I don't want to do something that would be not good for the college, and he wouldn't want to do something that wasn't good for the counties. But it was just, you know, that whole awareness, trying to be aware of, well, how can we do this, and you know, what are the unintended consequences if we do that, and how are we going to deal with that, or is it not worth it? Just all that stuff.
Gotcha.
Which is probably not innovative at all, but, you know, that's just the way we did it, that's all.
Well, it's definitely part of the equation. Would you be able to give a day in the life? What would a day in the life be as you were director, right?
Of Job Plus.
Yeah.
Okay.
What's a day in the life like?
Well, gosh, it would depend on when. Well, let's see. Hang on here a second. Well,
you could mix them together into a
day. Well, I did a lot of communicating with the leadership team, you know, and, you know, we had team leaders and administrators, and, you know, we did a lot of that. I did a lot of outside stuff. You know, either representing Jobs Plus in community groups or doing presentations. I pretty much did almost all of that when I was there. So I was kind of more outside. And then internally...
And well, can I just ask more about that? So you mean presentations like the national presentations?
Well, no, but also just local stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, if there was things going on locally where they wanted somebody to come and talk about what's going on with welfare reform, mm-hmm. or how are you doing this. And sometimes it was a real challenge because mm-hmm. depending on who was asking you, you sort of knew what kind of questions you were going to get. So if you were getting asked by a quote-unquote really liberal group, what they were going to do is basically say something to the effect of, isn't this awful that you're making all these people work and, mm-hmm. you know, blah, blah, blah. So mm-hmm. you had to be ready to talk about that and mm-hmm. not get defensive about it. Mm-hmm. That's what you're going to get.
What's your standard line for that?
My standard line, if I can remember because it's been a while, was... we want to make things better for everybody, mm-hmm. and that's why we're doing what we're doing. But if you have any individual situation that you feel someone was treated unfairly, here's my phone number. Mm-hmm. Once in a while, people would call me, mm-hmm. and once in a while, they were right. You know, mm-hmm. but I always tried to make it. You know, I tried to get away from the generalities because mm-hmm. people, if people talk in generalities, well, you know, this hurts people, and you mm-hmm. try to remember, well, what happened? Mm-hmm. Tell me what happened. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think. I never took it personally mm-hmm. because I actually think most of the time they liked me as a person, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and I didn't take it personally. And I understood because I used to feel that same way. Mm-hmm. And if we were doing something wrong, I did want to know about it. Mm-hmm. And that was a lot of what I did when I went out there was making sure people knew that they could reach me if they mm-hmm. had a problem. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you really never wanted to have anybody feel like they had no voice. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So they didn't always do it, but mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. sometimes they did. And
so you were, before I get to the other type
yeah.
of question,
okay.
you felt the same way, referring, but when you were in the PACE program.
Yeah, I started off feeling that way.
Were you like a hippie, would you say?
Oh, hey, I grew up in the 60s.
So
I graduated right. from high school in 1965, so I went through the whole thing, yes.
So then you were, because you sort of described yourself starting on that really liberal.
Yeah, very, very much so.
And moving.
And just other things I had done before mm-hmm. that, I think I was certainly of that bent. And I would never call myself a conservative now. I don't know mm-hmm. what I would call myself, mm-hmm. but I understood the thinking. You know, who said that if you're not a liberal when you're 25, you have no heart, and if you're not a conservative when you're 50, you have no head. I can't remember. Somebody said something like that. You know, it's just the learning. You know, you learn, and you try to let life inform you, and that's, I guess, what I'm trying to say. But I understood the feeling, and I really had a lot of respect for people who wanted to help other people, and that's what you were mm-hmm. getting there. Mm-hmm. People who were trying to step up and help people, mm-hmm. and sometimes they were right, and we were doing things mm-hmm. wrong. So, tell me about it.
Gotcha. And then, so you also had questions on the other end of the spectrum?
Yeah, we'd get both. Yeah, uh-huh. we would get both. It uh-huh. just depended on who was asking you. And sometimes it really was they just wanted information. They mm-hmm. didn't understand mm-hmm. what was going on, and they really just wanted, why do you do this, and what do you think is going to happen, mm-hmm. and what do you think is going to happen next? People mm-hmm. always thought we had an inside track, which, of course, we didn't. Mm-hmm. We did our best to figure it out. And how is this going to impact me, really, mm-hmm. is what it was. Mm-hmm. How is it going to impact my organization, my county, my whatever it was? And I always tried to prepare for that as much uh-huh. as I could. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. You know, you do the best you can, but mm-hmm. But you know, never really took it personally. Most mm-hmm. of the time, most of the time it was very positive. Mm-hmm. I think we had a pretty good reputation in the community, mm-hmm. and you know, and it's a hard thing to have. I mean, when you do a job like this, uh-huh. it can be very difficult because people want to see that you're doing something bad by making people work.
Uh-huh.
You know, mm-hmm. and unless you can really sell your message and say, you know, this is why we're doing this. We want to make things better. The other thing that changed, which I forgot to mention, although David might have at that time, is when welfare reform came in, there also came a different way of calculating work income to actually so that it would make it pay for people to work. Before that, and I don't remember the exact formula, mm-hmm. but at a certain point, you were basically working for free because mm-hmm. for every dollar you would make, they would take that much away from you. And that was not much of an incentive to do. Well, with the welfare reform, one of the big things they did was change those formulas so it really was a financial advantage for somebody to work, even if they weren't working full-time or even if they weren't making a lot of money. It mm-hmm. was, and that was really important. That was a huge advantage we had when mm-hmm. we were selling the whole thing. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, so,
all right, very, very interesting. So you're doing a lot of communicating mm-hmm. with team members. Mm-hmm. You mm-hmm. were out there presenting to groups. Mm-hmm. You were mm-hmm. sort of selling this message mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. people who, you know, oftentimes wanted to see you as doing something bad.
Yeah.
And sort of diffusing that.
Yeah. And giving them an opportunity. I guess the other part is, I was out there talking, but hopefully I was listening too. Mm-hmm. You know, you really want to get input from the mm-hmm. community. You don't want to just be by yourself doing mm-hmm. your thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we got great mm-hmm. feedback, mm-hmm. you know, and sometimes it was something I could use and sometimes it wasn't, but you really wanted to make sure that people understood that you would listen to what they had to say.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. All right. And then you'd stop for coffee?
Oh, always. Always. Right. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, are you kidding? We had all kinds mm-hmm. of, you know, that was probably a big part of what you did. It was all that relationship building. Mm-hmm. Now, we had done a lot of that before, and this is a small town, so you really do know a lot of people, but it's important to keep building the relationships. Mm-hmm. It's very, very important. And, you know, one of the things I do in this job here, it's very, very important. And again, this is not innovative or new, but if people see you as a person, mm-hmm. they're much more likely to listen to you. Mm-hmm. And I'm much more likely to listen, mm-hmm. you know, to have a two-way conversation here if we see each other as people instead mm-hmm. of just, oh, that's that welfare person or that's that person that mm-hmm. is a liberal or that. I mean, it helps you get by the stereotypes and the idea. Yeah, yeah.
All right. Well, I would like to transition into what you do now.
Sure.
Let me just mm-hmm. We talked about how it was a day in the life, and that was that basically, and that's
There's probably other stuff, but right now, you know, honestly, I've been too long.
Sure. Leaner, meaner government, was that part of?
Yeah. Well, it got, you know, again, in the beginning, there was just a lot of funds. A mm-hmm. lot of funds available. We knew, you know, down the road that wasn't going to be mm-hmm. that way. And it, certainly now I'm not doing that piece of it anymore, but mm-hmm. I do understand that there's not as many funds available mm-hmm. to do mm-hmm. all the different things that we did mm-hmm. then. Mm-hmm. So, but we knew that would come, so mm-hmm. that was, you know.
Gotcha.
So.
Gotcha. A new technology, a new textual processes. Did you have to create a lot of technology?
Oh, God. Not me personally. Thank God. But yes, when we started Jobs Plus, we started our own database because mm-hmm. there was nothing. Mm-hmm. Now, there was what was then called the WMS subsystem, which was the welfare management subsystem, which dealt specifically with work activities. But that had been developed a long time ago for a totally other reason. So we were eventually what happened, I'm jumping mm-hmm. ahead, but eventually what happened is the state realized they needed to come up with a different system, so they have a different system now, case management system, and that's probably maybe been 5, 6, 7 years, I don't know. They did change that, but we had to start from scratch. And, you know, one of the people that we hired was somebody who had background in technology, and then we were very fortunate to find somebody totally by accident on our staff was really good at technology. So we sort of put together a little technology team, and they worked on that. But yeah, you know, no, I know just enough to be dangerous with technology. You know, and again, this was back in 1995, and I knew there was a way that you could do things where you just have to count everybody every time, but I didn't know how to do it. Uh-huh, and I knew there was a way to calculate things, but I didn't know how to do it. So again, we very much worked as teams. We were very team-oriented. And we'd just say, okay, I need this, you know, can we make this happen? Let me tell you about my biggest failure, okay?
Sure. Oh, yeah, that was one of the biggest highlights or low points.
Mm-hmm. All right. This is what I could, personally, I take mm-hmm. this as my biggest failure. Mm-hmm. And it's not horrible, but at the time, I was just so frustrated with it. You know, if you can imagine thousands and thousands of records we had. We actually had to rent space, lease space from another agency across the street mm-hmm. to put records because you couldn't throw them away. You had to keep them. Oh, my God. And it got so that it was taking up so much space, and I hated using our educational space for, you know, it was just driving me nuts. So there were some people on staff who had been talking about, oh, I'm probably not even going to get the right words now, you know, where you scan everything in. What do you call that now?
Digitizing or something?
Yeah, there was another name for it, but I can't think of it now. It's probably blocked it out because I was so bad at it. But we brought in, again, this is back when we had some money, so we brought in these people, and they pitched this idea of how we would get everything scanned in and that we wouldn't have to keep all these records, and we had somebody research the legalities to make sure we were okay. I wanted to do this so bad. I really wanted to. And there were a few people on the staff that wanted to do it. So we tried. We set up teams, and of course we had all these old records that we had to do that with. But, you know, part of the problem was that some of the records are coming in, and some are just ones people have to bring, and some are interactive. So it wasn't as simple as thought it was. And you know, worked on it and worked on it. And, you know, I'm sort of feeling like some grumblings from the team leaders. You know, I think they're thinking this is, you know, really kind of dumb, you know, not a good idea, because it was taking a lot of time. It was very, very labor intensive to get it going. But I had at least two people that really wanted to do it. So I think we've been struggling with this probably for 8 months, trying to get it done. I even brought people in and paid them overtime at night to do this. And one day, the administrative team, which was then was an associate director and the Learn to Work Center coordinator, and I forget, the finance person and the technology person came in, and they said, Pat, we want to talk to you. Okay, what? This absolutely is not working. The staff hate it. It is much more difficult than you think it is. And they just, you know, I can't tell you how they were basically saying, please, please don't make us do the same.
Really?
Yeah. I really didn't want to give up on it because I really felt like it was the right thing to do. But I also felt like if your whole team is telling you something, you have to listen to it. So I backed off of it. Now, whether they ever went back and did it again, I don't know. But I had invested time and money in it, and I really didn't want to let go of it. But I felt like they're all saying that, and I really do have a lot of faith in all these people, and they're working with the job coaches and everything. So I let it go. You know?
It was just more time to, I mean, you had to get the paper, then you had to go scan it, I guess, which takes a little bit.
And it was all the old stuff, too. And it was all these folks learning something new, which was, you know, none of us were geniuses at the technological. There were a few people that were really natural, but, you know, I think they were afraid of it. And I understand that. You know, I certainly was no expert at it either. And I sort of had it up here, but I never sort of could put together all the pieces to get it to where I wanted so that it wouldn't be so cumbersome. There's probably ways to do it now that are much easier. I was probably trying to do something too quickly, to tell you the truth. I was probably trying to do something that now is a lot easier to do. But I hated giving up on that. I really hated it. But, you know, sometimes you got to step back. So I did.
Well, that's a good one for a biggest failure. And you've had a bunch of highlights. I don't know, which is your highest, or did you have?
Well, starting Jobs Plus was my, I mean, I will always remember that as such a creative time. It was such a creative time because we had a lot of energy, a lot of enthusiasm. We worked great together, and it was just to sort of create something from nothing. I mean, what's not to like about that? You know, we weren't necessarily building on something. We weren't having to fix something. You know, we had a new building. We had new this. We had new employees. We had a new direction. I mean, it was fun.
Was that right after you got this funding?
It was always the same formula. It was just a matter of how you did it. The money, yes, it came in. We started Jobs Plus at that building in March of 95, and this is November of 94. So we knew that what that formula, we probably already had even leased the building, I mean, because they had to do the build out. I don't remember exactly when it happened, but probably right around then.
So that's right. And you said you met Bain?
Yeah, I can't remember I met her. Yeah, I did. I know I did. I know I met her. It must have been at one of those conferences or something. But I don't remember.
So they're like academic conferences?
Well, these were social services type conferences, although they always had a lot of really good speakers. They weren't necessarily academic. I wouldn't say that. And I'm calling it a conference, but maybe it wasn't a conference. But they were things like you'd be there for a couple days, and you'd have, some of it would be informational, you know, like from your social services and your Department of Labor people, this is what's happening, you know, and they would answer questions about how do you count this, or, you know, all that kind of stuff. But then you would have some, hopefully, people inspirational, you know, and David, whatever his name was, I would count that. He was, you know, he was a really good speaker, and he was very, you know, what he was saying was totally relevant to what we were doing. So, you know, you'd have that too. And sometimes they were put on by social services, and sometimes they were more just general, that kind of thing.
So did you have the other extreme, sort of like Mead, Lawrence Mead, and Charles Murray?
Don't remember the names, but I don't remember ever hearing them.
Yeah, they were sort of, if I recall correctly, they're the ultra-conservative version.
Yeah.
Whereas Elwood was kind of I looked him up after. So it's not like Harvard liberal-ish. Although he resigned.
Yes, he did. Which was always very. They didn't like the way some of the welfare reform actually came out, and he resigned, which I thought was pretty interesting.
Yeah. Did that cause you to rethink anything, or
because we knew what we were doing, and there, you know, as I said before, there could be places that what I would have said would be abusing the law. I mean, if you wanted to take it in a punitive way, only a punitive way. You could have done it, and perhaps some did. We never did. That was, you know, probably the thing I was the most proud of what we did. We always, I mean, individually may we have at times, yes, because you got people, and people are people.
Right.
But that was never our vision. Our vision was not to be that way.
Well, you hear about a lot of Wisconsin, the W2 program. Who's Tommy Thompson, which I don't know what he's doing now, but well, you hear, I didn't really look into it, but here that's kind of a punitive model.
Exactly.
And
basically,
very different.
The whole idea with some of those was to make things so difficult for people that they would say, I might as well get a job. And, you know, I don't have a problem having people to do, you know, do what they need to do. I really don't have a problem with that. But if that's the only thing you're doing, if that's all you're doing, I don't like it.
Great. Great. Well, this is really very interesting.
Let's tell you way more than you want to know.
You know, it's so the idea. You know, you don't even know what your end. You're going to write the case study. The idea is you interview all these people, and then you figure out well, which one has the better story for this part of the course.
Sure.
And you know, so it's like you don't know. But I think we got all the things that. Yeah, so tell me, so then you transitioned from that to...
No, actually, there were a couple in-between steps.
Okay,
here.
Well, because the career line might also be interesting because you've had a long career. You started before you did PACE. What kind of human services stuff did you do?
I did. I actually worked at the college before that, but I was in the human services department, and I taught Head Start teachers is what I did. And that was a fun job. I loved that job. I traveled to 5 counties and observed them and did what was then called, I actually think it still is called, the CDA, which is a credential, a national credential, Child Development Associate credential, and helped people get that credential, which was very, very involved, very skill-based, which I liked. But I traveled to 5 counties and observed them and got them college credit and worked through that. So I did that. I think that was starting like in 85. I did that. I also, before that, had worked just as a consultant at the Council on Women's Issues at United Way. I did, I worked at the YWCA in Cortland, did the, then it was called the Aid to Women Victims of Violence Program, worked for that.
Aid to Women
Victims of Violence. I think they've changed it now to Aid to Victims of Violence, but at the time it was, you know, again, you're talking back in the early 80s, I worked for them. So things were different then. And way back in my way other life, I was a school teacher for 5 years.
Oh, really?
So,
oh,
yes.
Wow, you've got the whole, all of human services.
I've done a little bit of everything. And then in between, what happened at Jobs Plus is at the college, there was a vice president of student services, and he was going on a sabbatical for a year. So they asked me to fill in for him for a year. So I did that. And then during the time he was gone, the college did a lot of reorganization, and they eliminated that position, but they created an associate vice president for student services. So I did that for a while and decided I didn't want to do that anymore. So I requested to go back. And at the time, you know, while I was gone, which was maybe a year and a half, my associate director had become director. And I didn't want to – this is really true. I really didn't want to do anything that would – displace her. You know, that's kind of difficult when, you know, she took over for me and that's how I wanted it to be. So basically, I said, is there something else I could do? So David and I talked about it, and for about a year or so, I worked with CNY Works with the youth program. That was interesting. So I did that
for a while. So this is before acting vice president?
No, that's after.
After associate vice president.
After associate vice president, then I worked with CNY Works with the youth program. Did that for about a year and a half. And then they asked me to come back here and do the Small Business Development Center. Jim Sunser asked me to do that. So that's where how I landed here. And this is so fun. I love this job. I absolutely love it.
Now, how you've done so many things. I mean, what kind of training did you initially seek out to do this? I guess initially teaching, right?
I was a teacher, but when I was a teacher, I only had 2 years of college at that time. I taught 5 years in Catholic schools, which way back then you did. I taught 2 years here locally and then 3 years outside of Albany. I really liked it, but I just knew I didn't want to do it for the rest of my life.
So did you have to have a certificate for that back then? Or?
I don't know if they do this anymore. Then, basically, if you had a 2-year degree, they needed teachers, and if you were, at, which I was, mm-hmm. a good Catholic girl, which I was, had gone to a Catholic two-year school,
okay.
They hired me. And so I did that for 5 years. Just knew, I actually liked it, but I knew I didn't want to do it for the rest of my life.
So
I had this great fear of being a burned out teacher.
Okay.
I was scared
mm-hmm.
to death mm-hmm. that I would be a burned out teacher, and uh-huh. I didn't want to be a burned out teacher. So uh-huh. I said, no, I got to do something different. So I won't go through the whole story. But I ended up in Indianapolis, and I worked as a director of a daycare center. And that's the first time I had worked.
Where is that? That's before this teaching?
That's after teaching.
After teaching?
After teaching, 5 years
then
ago.
Then before the YWCA.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I went to Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. We won't go through how I got there. But,
okay. Plain, I mean, assume.
But okay. It's actually pretty interesting, to tell you, too. But I worked there for about 3 years as the director of a daycare center. And that's mm-hmm. the first time I worked with preschool-age kids. Mm-hmm. Because when I was a teacher, I was mainly fourth grade, you know, that age, which is a great age to teach if you ever want to be a teacher. It's great. So I didn't know how I was going to like daycare because I didn't have any kids or anything mm-hmm. like that. But I actually liked it. But that's when I sort of figured out, you know, if I ever want to really do anything more, I got to get a four-year degree.
Mm-hmm.
So I went back to school.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to the University of Missouri in Columbia
mm-hmm.
and got my four-year degree and got almost all of my master's degree, ran out of money,
mm-hmm.
and came back and started at the YWCA here.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Gotcha.
So then that's the story, YW, and then did the Council on Women's Issues and the Head Start and all the OCC stuff.
Yep, yep. And what was your major?
My major was human development.
So human development. Okay,
mm-hmm.
all right, close.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, I had a little bit of everything. I had a minor in aging. How do you like that?
Oh, supposed to be a big boom field.
It was, well, this was back in 1976. So.
No, well, maybe not yet.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
it's all my age that's growing, yeah.
The first person just signed up for Social Security, right? The first baby boomer.
Yes, yes, that's my sister.
A few months ago.
Yeah, my sister's age is she's, I don't think she's drawing her Social Security, but she was born in 1945, so that would have been the
first
month,
year.
And I was
yeah.
47. No, she was born in 46. She was born in 46, I was born in 47. So.
Oh, wow, wow.
We're old.
Wow. Yeah,
you're young
you
and we're old.
You don't seem that old. I think that's my father was born in 46. He seems a lot older than you, but I mean,
that's because he's your father.
He looks so, yeah. But all right. Well, this is a lot exciting. Okay, so you got to business. The reason I asked that is
yeah.
because the idea is students. Well, mm-hmm. you know, get a feel for mm-hmm. how careers progress, and you've had done a lot of exciting things, and so
yeah.
you get to small business, and you felt ready to do small business.
I did. You know, partially. The other thing I should say is from Pace. I was asked to do Pace too. The last job I ever actually applied for was that Head Start one. And that was through OCC. That's the one where I trained the CDA.
Mm-hmm.
That's the last one I ever applied for. After that, mm-hmm. everybody asked me.
Hmm.
I like to say that because it's
yeah.
true.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that speaks to, for your students, if you do a good job, people pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, you know, for everything that was there, they asked me to do it. And for small business, the reason I really liked the idea, it had never even occurred to me to do this,
mm-hmm.
but Jim Sunser had said, come on, why don't you do this? But there was always an overlap with economic mm-hmm. development. Mm-hmm. You know, the last few things I did, other than the student services stuff, mm-hmm. was all workforce development, so I felt mm-hmm. like I had a pretty good handle on a better understanding of economic development.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, my husband and I had owned a small business.
Mm-hmm.
We owned a restaurant for 3 years.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And his parents owned restaurants for years and years. In fact, they finally just retired.
Mm-hmm.
So I did feel like I had somewhat of an understanding about small mm-hmm. business. Mm-hmm. Certainly, it was not an expert, but I had an understanding. And I had a lot of people that I knew in the whole economic development realm that I felt could help me.
Mm-hmm.
My sister is... the head, she's the head of that whole West Side initiative at Syracuse University, and she worked in economic development at National Grid for a number of years, so she's got all the,
uh-huh.
you know, she knows all the people there, and I know the people in the county in economic development,
mm-hmm.
and I knew, again, through Jobs Plus, I knew a lot of the chamber people,
mm-hmm.
so I felt like I had a lot of relationships already built, which, as you can probably tell from me,
mm-hmm.
is a big deal of what I do,
mm-hmm.
And I felt so lucky that, you know, when you get to be around my age, you don't want to switch jobs because you're to the age where you need to keep the same health insurance, you need to keep the pension and all that kind of stuff. But a lot of times you don't get to do anything different,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, what an advantage this is. I get to keep my same employer,
mm-hmm.
all my benefits, blah, 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 but I get to learn something new
mm-hmm.
and do something different.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay,
yeah,
I like this. That's really unusual.
Mm-hmm.
You're too young to understand
mm-hmm.
this, but it really, it's a... it's a double-edged sword when you work in an institution, you know, like a, either government or education or whatever. You get to a certain point, and the benefits are so good. It's not like private where, you know, they're going to do away with your health insurance tomorrow or something like that. You have really good benefits, so you don't want to give those up as you get closer to retirement age. But a lot of times, people don't want to give you anything else to do because they think you're a stick in the mud and can't ever get past, we did that once and it didn't work. You know, that kind of thing. So I felt really fortunate. And, I mean, I knew coming into this, there was, you know, one major problem. They were upfront about that. And I thought, okay, I can deal with that. I've dealt with a lot worse problems than that, so I can deal with that. And
what was the problem? Was it a, was it a personal? No, it's not relevant. Right people.
For example, I'll just give you an example. Joan Powers is one of the business advisors here. When I started this job, everywhere I went, you know, when I was talking to people, the first thing they would say is, oh, you have Joan Powers. She's so great. I mean, she has such respect in the community. And if you met her, she's very understated. She's not anybody who's flashier, you know, anything like that. But she's so good at what she does. She's wonderful. She's one of those people that if you called me tomorrow and said, you know, my brother wants to start a business, who would you want? I would immediately hook him up with Joan. That's how good she is. Tanya is the person that's in the main office. She's a business advisor also, but she's like the intake advisor. So everybody sort of goes through her, and she really coordinates the office. Great thing about it, and, you know, we're all old, okay? I'm going to tell you that right now. We're all old. Tanya is so great. She always wants to do new things. I love this. We have a website now. We didn't have one before. She did it all. She just did it. We now have, we're working with the MDA, and we have live chat with a business advisor, and it's you can get to it through the MDA site, the Metropolitan Development Association, or through our site. That's so different. We had never done anything like that before. But she's always willing to sort of jump in and say, let's look at that. That is so fabulous, you know. It is so great to have people that just really want to, because the Small Business Development Center has been here about 23 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, it's been at this college about 23 years, and to have people, and most of these people, not all, most of them have been here not that long, but have been here a long, long time, and to have people have a new person come in, okay, I'm the new person, and basically say, yeah, we'll do things differently, we'll do, you know, I've got an idea for this, or I've got an idea for that. It's nice, because you can actually get in, which is what I like the best, that whole team kind of a thing, you know, and you got to deal with what you got to deal with.
Yeah,
but they're great. They're absolutely great, and we've done a lot of new things, and I really like that.
And so, what is the mission of the center?
The mission of the center is to help beginning or existing businesses to either with whatever they need. To either, if it's a beginning business, to get itself going, and that can be everything from they start with an idea, and you help them through the idea to development of a business plan, to development of financials, to helping them hook up with financing if that's what they need, to actually opening the doors, you know, everything there. Or if it's an existing business, sometimes they'll come back because they've expanded and they need help with certain things like a common one is human resources, because maybe when they started, they didn't have any employees. Now they've expanded, they've got employees, and you know, how do you deal with employees? You may know your business content, but you may not know anything about that. But and we do that mainly through individualized business advisement or counseling, but also through training. So we offer classes, and then we do individualized business counseling and advising. That's in a nutshell, but that's basically what we do.
So who's your clientele? Are they people who have graduated from here?
Not necessarily. It can be the community.
Anyone.
And actually, we cover five counties, so we outstation people, too. We have Joan goes to Cortland, I think, once a month because they're one of our counties. We actually don't go that much to Madison anymore, but we used to. So
the Small Business Development Center is a regional?
There's a national Small Business Development Center organization.
Okay.
But then in New York State, there's the New York State Small Business Development Center, whatever it is. And then from that, there's, I think, about 20 SBDCs across, around our state. Most of them are at community colleges, but not all. A few are at universities, and I think there's at least one at a private college. But it's, again, it's a combination of federal money through the SBA, state money, and then to a certain degree college money, a little bit of college money, not a lot. But the, you know, the mission is the same. It's always to help small business, because small business really is where you're going to get economic impact. And that's one of the things we have to track. We're very, you know, I feel like I'm back in social services to a certain degree. We track everything we do. We have to meet numbers. And one of the numbers is economic impact. We have to show. Last year, our goal was $5 million in economic impact. And what that means is money invested. So it could be money invested through financing, through somebody investing their own money, you know, in their business. Because that's, you know, there's a multiplier effect there. So, and we did. We hit our $5 million last year. And then we have to meet numbers of clients. Clients, I don't like that word, but I'll say it because that's what they say. Clients that we see, you know, overall. And then a certain number of clients have to be clients that we see for 5 hours or more. You know, the idea being that if, you know, the more time you spend with them, the more likely things are going to work well. But there, it's not, you know, not necessarily college students, although we really tried. That's one of the things we've done a little differently is to reach out to the college students, especially at a community college. And if a student, if there's a student here and they want to take one of our classes, we give it to them for free. And our classes are pretty cheap anyway, but we give it to them for free. But one of the things we did along this line, again, trying to get reach students, which I think is really good, the MDA has those two awards they give out every year. Just actually last year, I think, was the first year. One is the big one. It's the $100,000 business competition. You probably heard of that one.
Oh, I think I actually saw it. Was that when Spitzer came and gave a talk, and they there was some green technologies, and they're all competing. They showed like a 5-minute video down at the On Center.
I didn't go to that, but it might have been. But this is the one through the MDA, and they give out $100,000.
Yeah, I think it was
an emerging business. So this has
it was
so
new,
that was probably that
new,
one.
Yeah,
okay. And this has to be a business that's in business, and it's, you know, it's you know, fairly difficult, but you know, for $100,000 you would expect it to be. But last year they also had what they called a $5,000 business idea competition. Now, last year, that was open to anybody, and it was so simple. You went on their website. It was a one-page form. All you had to do was basic. I mean, you wanted to do it in an articulate way, but say what your business idea is. And the winner got $5,000. You didn't have to use that to start the business. You didn't have to. I mean, it was just you know, the idea to encourage entrepreneurial thinking. This year, and I love this, they specifically limited it to students. Either high school students or college students. So, you know, we've been, you know, you've probably seen the big signs everywhere. The one in my office trying to encourage our students to, I mean, our students can have a good business idea as well as somebody from LeMoyne or SU, you know, so why not? So we thought, we got to really get this out there. So in addition to getting the big, we got them to do big posters for us. We also did on the TV monitor. We got one there. But then we hosted right before Christmas, well, it wasn't right before. It was the students were still here, so it was probably during exam week or somewhere there. I don't know what you call it. We'll say it was an event right outside of Gordon Cafeteria. We set up tables with brownies and cookies. And we had Seth Mulligan from the MDA and Frank Kaliva from the MDA come down. And as and we had a lot of information, and as students went by and asked, oh, can I have a cookie? All you have to do is just listen for a second, and they would take no more than a minute to explain, give them the flyer, and we know, actually, Seth is really cool, he's a young guy, and he had his little BlackBerry or whatever, and while we were there, somebody from OCC turned one in. So we had, the last time I talked to him, there was four, and I thought, well, that's four we didn't have last year, and I don't know if they'll win or not, but, you know, why not? Why not do this? So, you know, we're having an SU intern this year.
Okay.
Not an OCC intern, which is, you know, we'll keep working on that, but we had an SU intern because we work with Larry Bennett, who does the entrepreneurship courses up at SU, and he had asked us, this was about 3 semesters ago, if his students work in teams to do their business plans, et cetera, and he wanted to know, could they come up here to talk with our business advisors before they actually presented their plans? Because his idea was, he knew about SBDCs, and he said the more they get practical, the better off. So we started doing that. We've done it 3 times now, where they come up here in teams and meet with one of our business advisors. And our business advisors hopefully ask the tough questions that eventually somebody's going to ask them anyway. So, you know, the whole, is there really a market for this? Have you thought about your, you know, financials in a different way? So so we did that. I don't know how I got talking about Larry Dunn. Oh, yeah, because that's when, you know, I thought, I've got to get more students involved, you know. But this young man had been in one of Larry's classes and had met with Joan as part of the team, and he really liked what he did, and he said, can I intern with you? So, ah, that's great. You know, we can't pay him, you know, but he's just for his own experience, he's going to do it. So so I'm excited about that.
Very, very interesting. Well, there's sort of a thought occurred to me as you were doing your your career trajectory mm-hmm. and the changing tenor of the times, and you started in well before Reagan was elected.
Yes.
Do you have any comments on? Are you familiar with the terms sort of the neoliberalization of policy? The idea it's just emphasizing free markets.
Okay.
More.
Yeah.
In policy.
Yeah.
And the idea of something I read about welfare reform was mm-hmm. a part of the new federalism, mm-hmm. giving mm-hmm. more opportunity for local innovation, which is
yes,
just what
exactly.
you're doing.
I remember hearing about that, and we really liked that.
It seemed it like
great.
It just freed up
mm-hmm.
the space for you, and you don't yes. use those terms because that's what I found on the website is actually yeah. the Urban Institute or something where
uh-huh.
I found it.
Yeah.
But, you know, sort of a national think tank.
Yeah.
And but the idea is sort of... you know, it's a less big government mm-hmm. and more of an mm-hmm. emphasis on market.
Yes.
On letting the market run.
Mm-hmm.
And very interesting book I just read. Somebody just told me I should read that. Carl Polanyi, have you ever heard of him?
No.
He wrote this in 1944.
Ooh.
But it's about welfare then.
Really?
and how liberalism, which is sort of the precursor to neoliberalism
yeah.
here,
yeah.
economic liberalism.
Yeah.
Was sort of, you know, pushing the free market and how we talk about it as natural and things like that. But it was very interesting. You know,
that's
I recommend
fascinating,
it. It's an old book.
Mm.
And I found myself thinking, how many people have read this
yeah,
book?
Yeah, so not old. Me.
It's,
you know,
it's
pretty
so
interesting.
But have you noticed more of an emphasis? I mean, it seems like you're doing mm-hmm. more of a sort of direct involvement in sort of managing economic development.
I think we have an impact. I certainly think mm-hmm. we impact that.
Mm-hmm.
I really
mm-hmm.
think we impact it. I don't know. I really don't know, honestly, on that, whether I'm managing it or not, but...
yeah, I just threw it out there because
yeah.
it occurred to me.
And we... I always try to look at the parameters that I have and then figure out how are we going to make this work.
Mm-hmm.
There's always a way to do
mm-hmm.
something. There's always
mm-hmm.
a way. And I wouldn't say... a rule breaker. I wouldn't say
mm-hmm.
that. On the
mm-hmm.
other hand, I'm not one of these, you know, I'm talking about me personally now, I'm not one of these people that says, oh, well, you can't do that because the regulations say that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like, and I don't know if that's what you're talking about, but like with SBDC, yeah, there's certain things that we're supposed to do and we have to do and everything,
mm-hmm.
but within that, you know, you want to be as creative and as, oh, was it my daughter, I bet. Hi, I'm still yapping.
Well, you don't have power.
I know. Oh, that's right. So how are we going to make our dinners?
I have to go to work, so...
What time do you have to be back?
1.
All right, do you want me to go down to Wegmans with you or something?
We can be done. We've done a lot. Yeah, this has been really... entrepreneurship. Reflections on entrepreneurship. You've been talking about it the whole time. What does it take to be successful in the way you have been successful? What does it take?
God. You know, I guess... That's such a hard question, and you know, I think with me, mm-hmm. I feel like I've been successful because I've been able to listen to other people.
Mm-hmm.
I've been able to partner with people,
mm-hmm.
And I've been open-minded,
mm-hmm.
and always looking to do things better. And the other big thing is having a team. I know that's a cliche, but boy, I could not work any other way.
Mm-hmm.
I could never be the type of manager where people are afraid to come talk to me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That is just not me.
Mm-hmm.
I always said, and this you probably heard this before too, but it's really true in my case, I always want people working for me that are smarter than me, which doesn't take a lot, I'll tell you. I always want that.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
I always
That's
want
very
that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. All right.
I don't know if that answered your question.
No, yes.
Okay.
Well, I mean, there's no right answer. I mean,
okay.
this is inductive. I have no idea. Like right now, I'm like, well, I don't know.
I don't
what
am I going
to
do
have
with
to
that?
Listen to this again. It was just, it's fascinating. And then it's going to, something will, you know, emerge.
Now, am I going to get to see what you do?
Yes,
at the
I'll
end?
Send it to you for, you know, for factual
yes,
and
sure.
other things. And then you choose whether or not you want
okay.
your name
yeah.
on
okay.
it type of thing.
Okay.
You know, it's, so nothing will ever be done without you.
Okay.
But there are several lines of research. You know, there's students
yes.
doing research, and there's this
mm-hmm.
And this welfare thing. Now they have you and David.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting to sort of put together and see what it
he's fabulous.
Means about.
He
well,
is
you have both been fabulous. And you,
he's
so you,
great.
You give each other kudos, and I've heard your name other places, too. So I was like, this is you were, neither of you were actually on the original list. The
Isn't
people that,
that funny?
I proposed, and then I was like, wow, this is more exciting than what I proposed.
That's
like,
interesting.
I don't want to let everybody know. But,
Have you should talk to my sister.
Oh, well...
if you have, anybody else.
You know, her name just came up in an interview, a pre-interview with somebody who is doing sort of nonprofit community development. Mm-hmm. So maybe I should talk to her.
And you will find, yes.
What's her name?
Marilyn Higgins. Marilyn Higgins. And she's very different. We have a very different style. So if you're looking for different kinds of things, you might find her really interesting to talk to. And she's had all kinds of fascinating experiences, really.
She's on a website. I can find her information.
I can send you her email. I'll send you her email.
Okay. Oh, that would be really interesting. Yeah, because entrepreneurial people know each other.
Yeah.
They really... And it's been very exciting. Well, thank you. Is there anything you want, you know...